Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production.
Now available on Apple Podcasts,
Podcast One, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
The following program is a PodcastOne.com production.
From Hollywood, California, by way of the Broken Skull Ranch, this is the Steve Austin Show.
Give me a hell yeah.
Hell yeah.
Now, here's Steve Austin.
All right, everybody, let me describe the situation or the location that we're in so you can appreciate this conversation I'm about to have with Kerry King, guitarist for Slayer. Kerry and I are locked away in a 15 by 8 foot wide room, two microphones, and I got a beer. Kerry, what are you drinking?
I got a watered down shitty soda.
A watered down shitty soda. You heard it here first on the Steve Austin Show. Anyway, so here we are. Dude, you guys just got finished rehearsing because you're about to go back on the road.
Yeah, we leave tomorrow.
By the time this show will have aired, you guys would already played Vegas, L.A., and a couple of other gigs. So how long is the tour going to last?
I think we're home December 1st. So a handful of shows in October and all the way through November.
Well, so we've been trying to do this interview for a long time. You and I met years and years ago, and then we ate dinner about a year or so ago. And we started trying to set this thing up, and you kept talking about practice. Dude, how much do you guys practice?
Well, when we started to set this thing up, I think it was before the first European run. They were home for a few weeks, and there was a second European run. They were home for 2 weeks, then there was a South American run. And I've just been home for about 2.5 weeks when we start this U.S. run. So just getting different songs. Paul just got back in the band, March? So it's just reinforcing songs he might have known in the past, songs he may never played before, and just, you know, making sure you're ready, because, you know, you don't want to go out there at the first show and suck. You know, you want to go out there and give the people at the first show the same people are giving the people at the last show. So right. We put effort into it.
A lot of the you know, the players have remained the same in the band. Obviously, with the passing of Jeff Hanneman, that's been fairly recent. How is that transition gone? I mean, I know you guys basically founded the band back in the day in 81.
Yep.
What was it about that cat when you guys met? Y'all just clicked.
It was funny. I was in a band with Tom. It was like a top 40 radio kind of band. You know, I wasn't a metal kid yet. I was only 16, and my guitar teacher at the time was priming me. I could tell he was priming me to take his guitar player spot because I was you could manipulate me. I was a 16-year-old. I had no set ways of doing anything. I was just happy to be on stage. I'm like, wow, my guitar teacher wants me in his band. This is cool, you know. So Tom was a singer, and that, you know, didn't last very long. And I kept Tom in the back of my head. And at this point, I knew I wanted to be in a metal band.
Right.
So I was looking back in 80, 81, looking in the Recycler newspaper. I don't even know if they still have that. But yeah, that's where you looked if you wanted to get in a band. You looked at the, you know, see who's looking for bands. And I went and auditioned for this band that is essentially was a Lynyrd Skynyrd, Blue Oyster Cult type band. You know, nothing against that, but that ain't what I wanted to do.
Right.
And I knew that when I went in there and played with them. And I saw Jeff on the way in. I said, hey, what's up? You know, I get done and I come out. And Jeff's playing guitar. You know, he's working the desk out front just playing guitar because he's got nothing to do. He's just killing time playing guitar. And he's playing songs that I want to play that I know. And I said, hey, dude, you in a band? And he said, no. I said, would you like to be? And I played with Jeff a handful of times. I played with Dave a handful of times. I brought me, Dave, and Jeff together. And then I hit up Tom and said, hey, man, I got something. You should check it out.
Right. So what was it about you guys that just clicked as a unit? This was the kind of music that y'all wanted to make with, you know, the debut album.
Show No Mercy. Well, you know, we played our stuff. Me and Jeff would go hang out and see bands. We saw Metallica at the Woodstock in Orange County.
Right.
Of all places. And we were blown away. You know, we were already into Motorhead and Venom. And there was a lot of talk of the Metallica guys. So we're like, oh, let's go check this out. And they were doing what we were doing the way we wanted to do it.
Right.
We just weren't there yet. You know, they were probably 12 months ahead of us. You know, just with shit togetherness.
Right.
And even back then, I look at Dave Mustaine. And to this day, I love him as a guitar player. One of my favorites. And I saw him playing. And it just blew me and Jeff away that he's just ripping solos and looking over there. He's not even looking at what he's playing, you know, and we were just like, man, that's awesome. And we were just into it, you know. Me and Jeff were like 6 months apart in age. We were just like the same person.
Right. So you guys hit it off. Well, you mentioned Dave Mustaine. Is there any heat anymore between you two guys?
Not really. You know, we've done the Big Four shows. Yeah. We did American Carnage, Canadian Carnage, you know, Slayer and Megadeth shows. Dave's a unique individual.
Right. Well, I mean, seemingly everybody in this industry is a pretty unique individual. Him more unique than others?
He's pretty special. You know, it takes a minute to even remotely understand him and then take him in as a friend or acquaintance, whatever you want to call it.
Well, see, that's an interesting dynamic because that being said, and, you know, the short time you were playing with those guys, a couple of gigs, but let's just talk the inner workings of Slayer. How tough is it for you guys to all stay on the same page and not hate each other? Because, man, you know, sometimes it's going up and down the road in my business. The old business is pro wrestling. I mean, you know, we're not a band. It's all everybody for themselves. But, you know, sometimes, you know, shit hits the fan. It's like, hey, fuck you, dude. How do you guys remain, you know, so composed and friends after all these years? When you hear, you know, like bands like the Eagles, all those guys will fly to a gig on a different jet because they hate each other.
I know. I heard a lot of bands like
that. So how have you guys weathered the storm?
The only thing that we've done to separate each other purposely is it like when Tom started coming out with his family, I don't know, maybe 10 so years ago. And, you know, I said, it's probably a good idea if you get your own bus, you know, because you never know what's going to be going on our bus, you know. And, you know, for the band, kids keeping you awake all night, if that's what would happen, kids stumbling in on something they really don't need to see, that's something. But that's the only thing, you know. We fly together. We're still on the same bus. We take off on the same bus in a few days. What took me the longest time to figure out for myself personally was what not to say to people, you know.
Right.
You have your opinion. Somebody's pissing you off that day. You don't need to say it.
Right.
Shut up. Get on with your day. Tomorrow's a new day, and it's all going to be fine.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's so many bands that break up, and you know, the individual doesn't usually have the talent of the whole.
Right.
You know, and we're good at what we do. We've got a very strong brand, very strong following, and it would be stupid, you know. The only reason I would leave Slayer today is if Tom said he was done, because then it's just me.
Right.
You know, or if I was done, it was just Tom. I don't think Tom would want to do it. You know, so not just the two of us.
So how do the day-to-day operations go by? I mean, just as far as someone need to call the shots. I mean, like, hey, if we're just talking about something as simple as artwork on a T-shirt or the set for that gig, who's making all those decisions? Is it a voting process? Is it seniority? Is it you and Tom?
I pretty much made up the set list since the dawn of time.
Right. Always been that way. Why?
I don't know. I guess it just got.
Are you just that take control kind of guy?
Kind of that, and kind of if I don't do it, nobody's going to do it.
Right.
You know, and I do good set lists, I think. But that being said, when I make up a set list, I run it by everybody. Hey, you got a problem with any of these? This song suck for you to sing? You know, does this song suck after this song? Tell me what's up, because I'm not thinking of it in that perspective. T-shirts, you know, it used to be me, Jeff, and Tom. Now it's just me and Tom.
Right.
So the difficult part about that is it could be 50-50 or 100%.
Right.
If it's 50-50, chances are I'll fold because I have better wars to win. You know, I'm not going to raise a red flag because this font's not what I like. You know what I mean?
Yeah. How involved are you in the creative process of your T-shirts? Cause I was very hands-on back in the day. You dig that?
Probably not as much as you because there's so many coming through.
Right.
You know, but everyone that comes by, I see before it goes out. And if I don't like it.
So you give it a thumbs up or down?
Absolutely.
Gotcha. So I was reading about the songwriting process within Slayer, and you know, when Jeff Hanneman was still around, he kind of had his thought process, his topics, you with yours, Tom with his. But you like to write the music first and then come up with the lyrics.
Yep.
Now, to me, break this down for me, because I'm a guy that always wanted to be a rock and roll star, you know, heavy metal guy, whatever you want to call it. I want to be in music. Can't sing worth a shit. Dad tried to teach me how to play guitar, didn't apply myself, no musical talent. Parents wouldn't buy me a drum kit. I ended up bouncing around the world in 20 by 20 squared circle. It worked out okay.
Sure.
But when I'm thinking, you know, write a song, I'm thinking, okay, come up with the lyrics first, and then you wrap the song around it musically. So I'm backwards of what your thought process is. How does that work for you?
I've only done that once by accident in my career.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's one of those things where I wrote some lyrics. Because I was either on a bus or a plane and bored to tears, and I had an idea, so I went with it. Turned out it became Spirit in Black, and then we didn't make up the song for the lyrics. We had a song the lyrics happened to fit in.
Right.
And that's how that one came to be. Other than that, 98% music comes first because it's a me and Jeff arranged song, a right. musician, not a lyricist. I mean, right. we're both, but we're musicians first. So I think that lends more to the music itself being awesome before the lyrics are even there.
Gotcha.
So you've already got one aspect of the music being awesome before there's even a lead or a vocal track put on it. Then when you add the vocals become icing as well as the focal point rather than just being there and working its way in. It just works for us. And then the leads are like the last thing we do.
Have you always been adept at writing songs or was something that you had to learn how to do? Because I mean, I used to go down the road and with so many damn thoughts and shit that was happening, man, I should be able to write a song. And I could write short stories.
Yeah,
but not so much a song. So was that easy for you, or is it a learned trait, process?
Well, you can tell listening to the first record. We were writing that as probably late 17, but it came, 18, because that came out when I was 19. So you could tell their thoughts of a high school kid rather than what we have now, thoughts of a 40-something-year-old. So I think we graduated the intensity of the lyrics, the topics of the lyrics, you know. We never could have grasped it on the first couple records. But as you understand society more, you can attack things from different angles, so to speak, and present things differently in ways that people were like, I never thought about this like that. I never thought about this coming from that angle, you know. That's the part that interests me and makes lyric writing easier for me because there's so many different ways you can slap people in the back of the head.
Right. Man, there's so many times I go to Ozfest and I would see Ozzy reading the teleprompter, you know, to help him out with the lyrics. How in the fuck do you remember all the songs that you play as a guitarist?
That's one of the reasons we practice.
I know it sounded like maybe a layup question, but
to get that question mark out of the way.
Yeah.
You know, and Tom, I told Tom to get a teleprompter years ago, and he'll insist on having a piece of paper like that with like a keyword on it.
Yeah.
And he'll just look down and see that keyword. I'm like, dude, they don't cost much. Yeah. Get a prompter. So when you're completely out of your fucking mind, you look down there and there you go. Bam. There's that lyric that everybody wants you to sing.
Yeah.
But yeah, he still does it like, you know, as cheap as possible. Piece of paper taped to the monitor, covering his sound.
Yeah. I was talking to Zach Wild one time. I'm pretty good friends with him. And I said, Zach, when you're out there playing all that bullshit, man, I said, what are you thinking? He didn't even hesitate. He goes, Steve, you ain't thinking. He goes, you're just doing it. He goes, if you're thinking, you're stinking. Is that true for you? I mean, you're just out there going through your...
Absolutely, but there's another perspective. When it comes time to go home, like you've been on the road for like 8-10 weeks.
Yeah.
My problem is I'm already home. And I'll be on stage, and I'll be thinking about sitting by the pool or going to the bar and having a drink.
That's where your mind's at?
Yeah. And then I'll come back and go, shit, where are we at? And you gotta like, really kick back into it. But it's so second nature. Your hands just do it without thinking about it 99% of the time. But, yeah, man, I mean, that last week is always a pain in the ass because either I'll be going home, Paul will be going home, somebody's sitting at home while we're on stage playing live, you know.
Yeah.
And it's hard to stay focused when you've been doing it. And like, we've been on this record since 09.
Right. Well, so there would be times when I'd be on the road and I'd be like, man, I can't wait to get the fuck off this motherfucker. And then when I get home 2.5 days later, I was jonesing to get back on.
It would take me a little longer than that.
A little bit longer than that. Yeah. But yeah, then again, I mean, it's a little bit different. We would be home a little bit more often than y'all. We'd constantly tour, but we're at home a little bit more. So maybe the cycle's a little bit different.
Yeah, when you we're get, gone at least 3 weeks at a time.
Yeah.
At least.
So then when you get home, how long does it take you to decompress and get back into your zone?
Couple days, you know. And that's basically just in case you came from a time zone that's opposite of yours.
Right.
You know? But other than that, it's just going home and not picking up a guitar, not headbanging.
No.
not putting my body through shit, you know.
So when you're at the house, will you just chill and not pick up a guitar and not play or practice?
For a while.
Yeah.
You know, and that could be any different amount of time from any different tour. But with Jeff being out of the picture, I play a lot more because I'm responsible for more music coming, you know, future music to come out.
Yeah.
So I keep that in perspective. But I don't sit around and play near as much as Zach or John Five or the guys that, you know, that's their life. You know, I come home and I've been doing this over 30 years. And, you know, It's good. I love it. Love playing guitar.
Dude, you but guys
I
just are still...
I want to come home and sit and do nothing, you know?
But you guys are still rolling strong. Y'all sure. had a hell of a damn run, and it's continuing.
Yep.
It's not slowing down. How much longer do you want to go out and keep doing this?
I feel good, and that's the first important thing. I feel good, and I like it. If I didn't feel good and like every show hurt
right.
or I had to take cortisone to get through a show or something, then I'd have a totally different perspective, you know. I think this has kept me young, actually, believe
right.
it or not.
Well, yeah, it's like, when people stop working, that's when they kind of start feeling old. But, you know, yeah. being on the road can be a real grind.
It is.
By the same token, it's a blessing to be able to play music and get paid for it. But at the end of the day, that's what you do for work.
Uh-huh.
So it goes both ways. Tom Araya, is am I pronouncing his last name mm-hmm. correctly? He had some surgery on his neck.
Yep.
What exactly? He had some fusion?
I think it was something similar to what you had.
Yeah, so I had 3-4 fuse, but I know, you know, my point is that kind of the way he was banging his head
yeah.
took its toll on his neck, and now he kind of restricts himself from doing that, had the surgery, he's in a better place. What kind of injuries have you racked up through your 30 years on stage? You had to have some crash landings and some fuck-ups. Are
no.
you feel good?
Mm-mm.
Knees good?
The only
Hips
thing,
good?
The only thing that happened like 3-4 summers ago, I don't know if it was Vertigo, but we were playing with Maiden at Nebworth 4 or 5 years ago. And it was after we played late at night. And on that particular bill, we played like 4 in the afternoon. And the night prior, I was up with Dave Murray to like 4 a.m. drinking in the bar.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I probably went on stage half cocked still, you know,
yeah.
didn't get enough sleep.
Yeah.
We got off stage. The party started again, 5 in the afternoon.
Yeah.
And we had to take a ferry to get to our next place. So we get out of there, drinking, get on the ferry, get off the ferry. We drive from somewhere in France to somewhere we're going in Austria. And I get off the bus, feel great. And we had 2 shows in a row coming up in Vienna, Austria. So I wake up that afternoon to my wake-up call. I can't describe what was wrong with me. I thought I had food poisoning because I couldn't stop throwing up.
Right.
Then I realized that by what I was doing with my head was making me throw up. It wasn't because I don't eat weird shit on the road because
right.
I'm deathly afraid of getting food poisoning.
Right.
So what I came to realize as I'm sitting above the toilet hurling one night is if I went in a headbanging motion,
yeah.
my head thought it was going like this.
And
it would instantly make me puke.
Right.
So I had to sit in bed. And then as that day went on, I kept having my tour manager call me like every hour. I said, push the show as long as you can. Push the show as long as you can. I'm going to try and make it. And then he called me at D-Day. He said, this is it. You're making it or you can. I said, I can't stay out of bed for more than 15 minutes. My first show I ever canceled.
How long did that last?
If I was 5% that day, the next day I was 10. Next day I was like 18. Next day I was about 30.
Gotcha.
And it was a slow comeback.
Yeah, yeah.
And I attribute it to being exhausted and dehydrated.
Yeah.
Because Tom had something a little bit similar in Australia 1 year. And, you know, he looked like he was sick and going to hurl, and he was drinking a shit ton of coffee, and he wasn't getting any sleep. So it was a little different than drinking a shit ton of liquor and not getting any sleep.
Right, right, right.
But the same effect.
Yeah.
And I didn't headbang for like 10, 12 shows, and then we came back into the Jimmy Fallon show. So it was right after World Painted Blood came out. And that's when I'm like, I'm going for it. And I gave it enough time, and I felt good. And I felt good ever since.
So you're 46 now?
I'm 49.
49? You're older than me. I got you. I got you in dog years, though. I got some miles on me. Talk about life on the road. Towards the end, I started slowing down a little bit because I couldn't recover as fast. You know, back in the days when you were a kid doing this stuff.
Oh, yeah. You're invincible.
You know, the drinking and everything. It's kind of changed, or has it? Have you slowed down? Have you starting to pace yourself now?
Well, the way – this is funny. The way I know I'm not an alcoholic is I don't wake up
in the
morning.
You quit again. Yeah.
I don't wake up in the morning and need to drink.
Right.
You know, and that's how I know. I mean, once every 6-8 months, me and my wife will have what we call a day drunk, you know, and we'll
right.
get drunk in the afternoon and just drink till we go to bed. But that's not my life. That's not who I am. You know, my thing's more of a social thing after the show. I got so many friends in this business and your business.
Yeah.
When I just saw Jericho, you know, and he played like 2 miles from my house. I'm like, man, I can't snub Jericho. I got to go.
Yeah.
And then we end up at my house and we drank till 3 a.m. but it's just the kind of thing where you come through town and your friends want to have that shot with you. You know, they want to have that drink. They want to hang out. And that's just who I've become and who I am. So I'm glad I don't need to wake up and have a beer or something, because that would end my life a lot quicker, I'm sure.
How's the camaraderie on the road? Because, you know, we would cross back in the day when WCW was still around and I was in WWF, or vice versa, you know, crossing territories and maybe staying in the same hotel, you know, and then, of course, it'd be drink fest. You know, that's the environment you guys are in all the time. So it certainly lends itself to a sore liver down the road.
Absolutely. And with that being said, there's restaurants I go to, like in Indianapolis, for instance. I know the head bartender at St. Elmo's Steakhouse, you know, what most people say is the best steakhouse in town, either that or Shula's, and it's right down the street from where the Colts play. And that guy comes to our show every time we come through town, and right around the corner, Indianapolis, one of my second homes for some reason. Never lived there, just one of my second homes. There's another place, guy used to work at the Hard Rock Cafe, him and his buddy, and they always come to our shows, and it's on when I'm with those guys. Right. It's on. So it always hurts when I leave Indy in more ways than one.
But you're just drinking or just having fun because you like to. You don't just throw down because you got to rep the Slayer brand.
Yeah, that's not my style. I mean, it might turn into that.
Right.
It turns into that, you know, more often than it doesn't. But especially in Indianapolis and some of my other home away from home. So I got a football buddy and he lives in the Keys. So he'll usually come to Atlanta or anywhere in Florida or sometimes Michigan, because that's where he went to college. But that dude, he'll be on side of the stage and all 6-7 of them, however big he is. And he's holding the ball of Jaeger, just swinging the whole time we're on stage. So we get off stage, he's already having his party.
Right.
So then the question is, do I want to catch up or do I want to enjoy the festivities?
Hey, man, how did you guys come up with the name Slayer? Were there any other options? Were there any front runners? Or who
that
came
was
up with the name?
That was the front runner. If I'm not mistaken, that was Jeff's idea. You know, without the logo, just the name itself.
Right.
And I think there was three we were looking at, and I couldn't tell you what the other three were. I mean, for a long time, even to this day, people will say, so you got Slayer from Dragon Slayer. And I'm like, no, that's a rumor that we never started. I don't know where that came from, but a lot of people think we did, but the other two, I couldn't even tell you what they were. Probably a good thing. I mean, we got a pretty good one.
Man, I'm a big fan of art in general, specifically stuff on album covers, T-shirts, that kind of stuff. How did you guys hook up? Larry Carroll has done all of y'all's covers, or three or four of them?
Four, yeah.
How
did
you guys
hook
up
the last
cat?
Three when Dave was in the band, and when Dave came back to the band, he did the first one, which I thought was cool.
Yeah.
And I have that one.
So how did you guys hook up with Larry Carroll? I mean,
I don't remember originally.
Dude's like, he's a crazy artist. I mean, the stuff is just so badass. I mean, it's not like, from what I was gathering or reading, I mean, he kind of just knows or maybe gets a chance to listen to the album, but you guys don't specifically give him any instructions, and maybe until you see something and then point him in a direction. How does that process work?
I don't,
because the album covers are killer.
Yeah, I don't remember in the beginning. I think it was just an idea from the record company, because, I mean, when he worked on Rain and Blood, shit, I was 26. I didn't know anything about art or artists or anything.
Right.
So somebody had to suggest him. And then when we got that, when we liked it, so we kept going. We kept going with the same team. We had the same engineer. We had the same artist up through Seasons in the Abyss. And then, you know, we got him back when Dave came back. And around Seasons and certainly Christ Illusion, like, we would give him song titles or the lyrics. So here, read this. You know, he makes nightmare art, what I call it. Looks
right.
Like just shit nightmares are made of.
Right.
And then he presented his first idea for Christ Illusion, and we just redirected a little bit.
Right.
You know, the idea is basically what he came up with, but we made Jesus a little more fucked up. That was like the end of it.
But it's a badass cover.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah. You were talking about Seasons in the Abyss. It was about 1990. I was wrestling in Dallas, Texas at the time, in Metroplex Arena for Gary Hart. I just stopped wrestling with WCCW. Slayer came through. They needed some big guys to work security. Somebody contacted me. I actually worked security at a Slayer concert at Dallas Metroplex when you guys came through on the Seasons of the Abyss tour. Things have changed. It's gotten into a bigger machine. I mean, with the explosion and y'all's popularity.
I think that was the tail end of where we were really trying to change what security was. Because security didn't understand what we were doing, and if somebody came over the barricade, they were just out. You know, no matter how much that poor kid paid for his ticket,
right.
if that was all the money he had for his ticket and he inadvertently got thrown over in the second song, he's out of the building, you know, and we wanted to change that.
So what is y'all's stance on that? Because basically, man, I was pretty jacked up. I had a long blonde ponytail. I was walking around. I didn't do a damn thing. I was enjoying the music and checking everybody out, and it was a great time. There weren't any fights to speak of, certainly some moshing, but what are you guys expecting out of security? Because sometimes, I mean, if you go back and look at some clips of, you know, various bands or whatever, people, you know, some of those guys take some shots and take your liberties on some of these people that paid. So where do you draw the line with your security? What kind of instructions do you give these cats?
Well, we don't roll with our own anymore, but we do have security discussions with the house, you know, people. And of course, if there's a fight, they have to separate it. That's how it is. But if anybody comes over the barricade, if they're not swinging at you, let them out.
Right.
You know, if they kick you in the head by accident, it's not their fault, you know, and I've seen it a million times.
Yeah.
You know, some guys don't belong down there. And if Tom sees it, he'll, if we're running two songs together, he'll stop and point at that dude and get rid of him.
Right.
You know, and of course the crowd loves it and think they're doing it, Tom's doing it for him. And at the end of the day, he's doing it in their best interest because that guy's going to fuck somebody up that don't deserve getting fucked up.
Yeah.
It's just tough, man, because you can't be down there and police everything.
Yeah. But it's, some of the clubs, like the show y'all going to play, y'all will have played, the Palladium in L.A. versus some of those big outdoor festivals where you guys have, I don't know, how many people are there? 100,000?
We did Mayhem in 2012, and we did the biggest one ever in San Bernardino, and I think they had 25,000. But, yeah, we did big places like that. Actually, the big four shows, we did the one in Coachella, which was – had to be 60, 80,000. We did the one at Yankee Stadium, and the ones in Europe were over 80,000.
So, dude, what are you thinking when you're seeing that sea of people digging your music? It's just, is that a bigger high than a small club? Or do you dig the intimacy of that small club and being able to rock that thing with the acoustics?
I think that intimacy is more fun for me.
Right.
But at the end of the day, I try to put on the same show because if you're playing for 20, 200, 20,000, 100,000, you know, everybody paid.
Right.
And they deserve my best. That's another reason I don't drink during the day.
Right.
That's another reason. I mean, I've broken that rule maybe 10 times in my life. Usually it was Zach Wilde.
Right. I got bored. I got barred by Bob Brand from coming to Zach Wilde's house because every time I would go, I would take a half gallon of Wild Turkey and our Crown Royal. And we did some stupid shit. And Bob Brand said, if I come up, I cannot bring the Crown Royal anymore.
Well, he's your size. He's giant. And he loves to wrestle and, like, you know, get roughhousing and shit.
Hey, man, you used to wear every now and then a Stone Cold shirt while you guys were playing on stage.
Yeah, for a whole tour.
Man, least. I dug that. I was very flattered.
Had the one with the fingers.
Yeah. When did you start watching wrestling?
I don't know, man. Definitely in a better time than it is now.
Yeah, it's changed. I'll be politically correct and say it's changed.
Me, when I liked it, of course it was fake, and of course it was, you know, storylines and shit like that. But the characters were believable.
Right.
The Stone Cold, Cactus Jack, fucking Rock, Triple H, Undertaker, Kane. These guys were scary, could do some awesome shit in the ring, and didn't need no stupid bimbo tagging along with them, you know? And I liked it for that. It was cool. I went to a bunch. I went to WrestleMania 2000 Anaheim. I went to one of the other pay-per-views. I got my floor seat still. I met you at one of them.
Yeah.
Same one I met Jericho at, whichever one that was.
Speaking of, we keep in our conversation, we talk about Dave or Paul, the drummers. They keep seeming to rotate. Dave Lombardo come in, Paul Bostaff, is that his last name correctly?
Bostaff.
So what's the story on the comings and goings of the drummer?
Well, Dave, I mean, he'd been back since 2001, 2, something like that. He came in when Paul left the last time. And every time Paul's been in the band twice and he left, you know, on good terms, he just thought there was something else out there for him. And he's been my friend for all these years. But when Dave was in this last time, I figured I'd be on stage with him until one of us fell off the stage dead.
Yeah.
You know, and things change. He got some bad advice and listened to some bad advice, gave us an ultimatum 10 days before we went to Australia. And I said, I can't have this over my head. And I feel bad for Dave to this day. I really feel bad for him because he shot himself in the foot. Maybe he thought he had the upper hand, but you ain't going to get me.
Yeah.
You got to be in the place where, all right, before I got home, I knew what I was going to do.
Right.
I knew exactly what I was going to do for Australia.
Right. What do you do to wind down if you're not doing sleigh, if you're not trying to ride anything, you're just trying to chill out? I know you have this monstrous snake collection.
I do, to the point where now it's in a warehouse and not at my house.
You took it out of that – when I came over the one time, it was in the laundry room?
The garage. Yeah.
So it's in a warehouse?
Yeah, my wife wanted the garage back. At least I can
do
that.
So what do you do? You call up some warehouse, say, hey, man, I got –
Well, actually, a friend of mine who's got a reptile store in Orange County someplace.
That was a reptile store, not an erectile store.
Yeah, reptile store.
For my deaf listeners.
He's got a – You know, they're in one of those places, got like an office in the front, warehouse in the back, and his place is just one big room. But then one next door opened up, and he wanted the front space. He wanted the window space. I'm like, I don't want no fucking window space. So there's a door going to the warehouse where all my shit is, and the front door where all his supplies and stuff are. So, you know, it's just I took the place next door to him. There's somebody there 7 days a week. If me or my other guy ain't there, somebody's there, which is awesome to me because it's – better than security, you know. Somebody's looking out for you. Didn't I get the back? I share the rent. I don't share the rent. I pay the majority of that one because I got the most space, but that's where my stuff is. And now I got a full-time guy that does it because I just tour too much.
So do you ever go in there and
I was there the other day, yeah.
What do? You just mess around with them? Check
well,
them out?
Well, I mean,
look,
we probably had 500-600 babies this year, so we're still in the process of picking anything that I might want to keep, anything that's going to be top dollar, anything that's going to be wholesale. It's just, you know, decision kind of things.
So, man, are you breeding them and then selling them?
Mm-hmm.
And that's part of the deal?
Probably the biggest carpet python breeder on the West Coast, at least. Could be in the States.
Is there paperwork that's got to go with every single snake, all that?
I don't ship overseas where I would need that.
Right.
I used to have an import-export permit, but, you know, Europe's ahead of us. So if somebody wants one of my snakes, they want it because it came from Kerry King.
Right.
You know, and then it just becomes a hassle, and it's you're paying more shipping than the snake's actually worth. But the stuff I'm doing and stuff I'm producing, like up until this year, I had like six of the only ones in America because I'm the only guy to produce them outside of Europe.
How long have you been doing this?
I got back in around 2003. But all through the 80s and 90s, I had a bunch. And I got out for 8-10 years because it was becoming bigger than Slayer.
Right.
And I wasn't paying attention to Slayer.
Really?
So when I got out of all that shit, that's when you saw Kerry King's name on everything again.
Yeah. So, but what made you say, hey, man, I dig the snake? It was just something you always...
In the early days, like 84-ish, I went to some people's house in, I think there was Houston, somewhere in Texas, and they called themselves the Doom Society. And they were big-time Slayer fans. And they had a Colombian boa constrictor, and they called it Slayer.
Yeah.
And I thought it was cool, just the reptile in general, because it's not like a dog, not like a cat, not like a lizard. Doesn't need to be fed and watered every day. You could leave it with some water and leave it for weeks. And right. That fit in good with what I do.
Yeah.
So I went home and I got a boa constrictor and I named it Venom because I like Venom.
Yeah.
And I had that snake for a long time. And, you know, one led to two led to 10 led to 50 at my parents' house. And that wasn't a good idea. But I moved him into the garage there and that's how I had him there for a while. And then when I got my own place, they came with me.
This is the Steve Austin Show.
Hey man, do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. And I bet it can be hard work. You know what's easy? Bundling policies with GEICO. GEICO makes it easy to bundle your homeowner's or renter's insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you already have so much to do around your home. Go to GEICO.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. It's GEICO easy. Visit GEICO.com today. That's GEICO.com.
Steve Austin, Unleashed.
Kerry King, guitars for Slayer. We were talking football the other day. Your team is?
The Oakland Raiders.
Oh, the Oakland Raiders. Hard times. You think Terrell Pryor is their quarterback of the future?
He's impressed me a little bit this year. I mean, I got to say, he's better than I expected him to be. He needs some weapons, without a doubt. I think McFadden's always hurt. He's excellent. Upper echelon when he plays. He hadn't played an entire season since we got him. Yeah.
Are you into the fantasy football at all?
No, because I think it would take too much of my time. I'm always in pools every year
right.
to where you pick wins.
Right.
But if I'm picking players, I need to pay way more attention to stats and stuff like that.
Who else you like in football?
I like football.
Yeah.
You know, I'm on Sunday, don't fuck with me.
Yeah.
You know, it's my church day. I'm watching football.
Same thing with me. People always ask me, well, you know, what's your team? I don't really have a team. When the Saints won the Super Bowl a couple years back, I was cheering for the Saints. But I kind of float around, watch the different programs. I like what Harbaugh's done with the 49ers. Mm-hmm. You know, like what the other Harbaugh's done with the Ravens. In that Super Bowl, I wanted the Ravens to win because I wanted the older brother to have one up on Jim. But, you know, it was hard to really pick anybody in that team because I wanted both teams to win. But it turned out like it did. So I don't really just hang all of my hopes and dreams on one team. I just dig the storylines and how everything's shaken out.
I mean, what's up with the Giants? Holy shit, yeah. Zach Wild. Zach loves the Giants.
Zach, a big Giants fan? Yeah. Oh, God.
Yeah, I sent him a text the other day with a picture of their 0-6 record.
Yeah. Dude, I don't understand what happened. This doesn't look anything like the same team from last year.
No, and on the other side of the ball, I don't understand what the Vikings are doing starting Josh Freeman when he's been there for 2 weeks. That doesn't make any sense to me.
Well, you know, I question the Christian Ponder draft back in the day. A lot of people were high on him, his athleticism, his upside, you know, with a few years of maturity. It doesn't really seem to have happened. Who's the other guy in that system?
Castle.
Yeah, you know, Matt Castle, you know, when he came in to back up Brady, you know, and he got the good contract in Kansas City, and, you know, what, one good year there, but he got paid.
Decent, yeah.
He got paid, and he's a good backup. Yeah. He's just not the
it's
guy.
Just, well, Kansas City wasn't – they were still in transition. They weren't ready to be prominent like they are now.
Well, it'd be interesting to see what would have happened had Matt Castle gone to them and with Andy Reid just coming in.
Oh, absolutely.
Andy Reid has got those guys going in a good place right now.
Yeah, I think that'd be fun.
And I'm really happy for Alex Smith because I dug what that kid has been done ever since he got down to San Fran. He's had a different offensive coordinator every single year. So, you know, there's high expectations for that kid being a number one draft. And, you know, now he's a damn good quarterback. With that injury, what, a concussion 2 years ago to put Kaepernick in, and it was over for him.
Yeah, Alex Smith last year when he went down, he had like one of the top completion percentages, one of the best quarterback ratings. And, you know, he finally had a guy that was there longer than a year and he can, you know, embrace a system for a change.
Right.
But he still, you know, came to KC and he's still doing well. But, you know, Andy Reid, Jesus, I mean, Andy Reid got ran out of Philly. He's a great coach.
He's a great coach. I just think that his time was up there. I just think that with the players, they got some good players, but things went stale. Things went stagnant.
Sure.
I don't know if he lost the team.
Kind of like with Jeff Fisher, too.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was just time for him to go elsewhere. But I'm glad that the elsewhere place that he went, Kansas City, which is a great franchise, he's found success.
Yeah.
Those dudes are busting ass on defense.
Yeah.
And, you know, Jamal Charles back from his knee injury. He's running strong. He's doing well. When you think of great quarterbacks, let's talk about Peyton Manning, Tom Brady, Drew Brees. Anybody else in the conversation right now in that elite status?
Rodgers.
Who?
Rodgers.
Oh, Aaron Rodgers. Yeah, my bad. Green Bay, obviously, he's up there as well. So who's your favorite quarterback in the league?
Man, it's hard not to like Peyton Manning. I've always dug him. You know, you're saying, you know, what's your other team? I always dug Indy because of Peyton.
Right.
You know, and I can't like the Broncos because I'm a Raiders fan, but I still like Peyton Manning.
I never really liked the Broncos, but I like them now just because Peyton's playing for them. You know,
yeah,
he got the neck injury.
He's a general, you know.
Yeah, he's a class
act.
And
all the shit they made up in the media the other day about Jim Irsay talking, whatever he talked, you know, whatever he meant, however it came across, let Jim have the final word. Don't put words in his mouth.
Yeah.
You know, he admires Peyton Manning. He had him forever. You'd be an idiot not to say Peyton's one of the greatest quarterbacks ever.
Oh,
know?
Yeah, obviously, if not the, at least in the top three. And you can make that top three anything you want. I really like the class and integrity and talent of Andrew Luck. This kid.
He did good, man. He did better than I expected.
Well, I mean, he's a great football player. And Russell Wilson, I remember seeing him at NC State. Then he went to Wisconsin, got drafted. People, you know, was third-round pick. And, I was saying back in the day, this kid's going to be special. He's going to be a starter. And they brought in Flynn. Russell beats out Flynn. Now he's the guy, and Seattle's on fire.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, let's talk running backs. Who are you liking in running back right now?
Well, I mean, you got to say Adrian Peterson. I mean, after him, I don't even know where you go. Well,
man, you got to go Marshawn Lynch.
I was going to say Marshawn Lynch.
Yeah, you got to have him in there.
He's an animal.
He is. I love the way he runs the football. I love to see Adrian Peterson when he, you know, he'll break a couple of tackles but just get going because you don't expect a guy that big to be running that fast. Jamal Charles is fun because he's so shifty and elusive, but I also like Arian Foster. He'll turn that ball.
He's another big boy.
Yeah, he'll start skating along that side, skating along that line of scrimmage, and he'll cut it north and south and plant and go. And man, that dude's salty, and he'll lay a lick on your ass.
Unfortunately, Houston doesn't have the team this year, so it's taken his success away.
What is up with Houston? Is Kubiak the guy? Is it the team?
I don't think
coach?
It was Kubiak's what problem. Schaub just seemed to have lost it this year.
Yeah.
And a lot of my friends don't believe in him anyway. I was kind of not a bandwagon guy, but I always believed in him.
Right.
And this year, I kind of had my doubts, especially after last year going out of the playoffs the way he did. But this year, pick six, four games in a row. I mean, Jesus Christ.
Right.
This is pro level. You don't do that.
Right. Let's talk on the defensive side of the football right now. Any favorite players?
There's a lot, man. J.J. Watt.
I love J.J. Watt.
Alden Smith before he torn himself in.
Man, what happened to Alden Smith? Man, I mean, golly, this kid is lighting it up.
He's too young and couldn't handle the pressure of his age and what he had to do in life.
Right.
But J.J. Watt's sick. Jared Allen's sick. Linebackers, Patrick Willis.
And Navarro Bowman for San Fran.
Evil.
Richard Sherman for Seattle Seahawks having a hell of a year.
Yeah, he looks like the new Revis.
Yeah, he does. Man, I haven't even caught any Revis down in Miami, right?
He went to Tampa Bay.
Tampa Bay. I knew he was down there in Florida. So how's he doing in Tampa? How's he doing in Tampa Bay?
I don't know, man. I haven't watched any Tampa Bay games since the Josh Freeman fiasco came up, and they wouldn't let him play, and they cut him. And
dude, what was that all attributed to?
I don't know, man. That's a weird
one. Do you think Greg Schiano has that team on the right track, or is he a college football coach?
Most times I would say college football coach about anybody.
Right.
You know, I mean, look at Spurrier. He tried, and, you know, a number of other coaches.
Saving.
I think when you're at a college level, you're more apt to take direction than you are when you got money in your pocket.
Right.
It seems to me that's the way it is, because when a lot of the college people come up, they just can't reel that team in. You know, Chip Kelly, his first performance on the first game this year, I think it was a Thursday night, I was watching that. The Eagles looked unstoppable.
Let them up.
And then they figured him out week two.
Yeah. And they were laughing and smiling over on the sideline. They were happy, and everybody thought, hey, man, this is the next big thing. Watch. And so it hasn't turned out so much. I remember a couple of years ago when Tampa Bay was playing New York Giants in the playoffs and some part of the season, and it was like the last play of the game, and Greg Schiano had his players fire off. And Coughlin, I don't know if you remember this, but ate his ass out. He goes, man, we don't do that. This is pro football.
Oh, yeah, for going like
yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Basically, last play of the game. It wasn't going to change anything. You try to force a fumble and get a Hail Mary play? No. But so, and that's that college mentality. Now, I love what he did at Rutgers. Obviously, he's a good coach. But sometimes that just, I mean, look what happened to Nick Saban. You know, he went.
He tried to.
Yeah, he tried to, and then not so much. I'm happy to see Pete Carroll have the success after he's gone back. Now, of course, he ran USC's program into a shit pile of problems with all the sanctions that they had going against him. But now that he's been at Seattle for a couple of years, they got things on the upswing. Russell Wilson in place, Marshawn Lynch, defense playing lights out. So, and as long as they're playing at home, that they have a good shot at.
Yeah, it's pretty much over.
Yeah. You into any other sports?
I like hockey probably second best, but I don't follow it. I don't have the names like I do when we're talking football.
Yeah.
We're like, blah, 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 blah. You know, I got it all down, right here.
Do you follow the college football game at all?
Not college as much. You know, I pay more attention later in the year when I'm thinking about who's drafting who.
No, okay, well, let's down to pro football then, because what do you think, dude? I mean, seemingly in the last 2-3 years, I mean, it's – one head injury after another, man. Concussions popping up like a
sandwich.
And
they're trying to get rid of it, and it seems to be more prominent.
I know, but just guys are going down left and right. I mean, and, with all the ACLs we just got finished talking about, man, these guys are dropping like flies. And I don't think, well, they're never going to turn that around. They're never going to stop it. But I'm wondering, how many changes can you make to the game of football before you start turning people off?
Yeah, I totally understand what you're saying. I mean, I'm not turned off yet, but I completely understand no fun league.
Right.
I miss the kickoffs. I miss the kickoff returns, and I understand why they got rid of it. Doesn't mean I don't miss it.
Right.
You know, I miss it. I miss it every time there's a kickoff and you see it sail out of the end zone. It's like that takes out an exciting part of the game. But I mean, at the end of the day, if these people are getting injured and there's not going to be a guy to run the ball back, I guess you got to take care of them, right?
Right. Coming right back. Don't you dare move.
The Steve Austin Show. The Steve Austin Show.
Hey, man, do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. And I bet it can be hard work. You know what's easy? Bundling policies with GEICO. GEICO makes it easy to bundle your homeowner's or renter's insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you already have so much to do around your home. Go to GEICO.com. Get a quote and see how much you could save. It's GEICO easy. Visit GEICO.com today. That's GEICO.com.
Steve Austin, Unleashed. Unleashed.
All right, you've probably tried Hulu.com. Now with Hulu Plus, you can watch your favorite shows anytime, anywhere. Hulu Plus lets you watch thousands of hit TV shows and a selection of acclaimed movies on your television or on the go with your smartphone or tablet. And it all streams in HD for the best viewing experience. With Hulu Plus, you can watch your favorite current TV shows like Saturday Night Live, Community, and Family Guy. And you can also check out exclusive content, including Hulu originals like The Awesomes, starring SNL's Seth Meyers, and Moon Boy, starring Chris O'Dowd from Bridesmaids. Hulu Plus also offers a great selection of acclaimed films. For only $7.99 a month, you can stream as many TV shows and movies as you want, wherever you want. Right now, you can try Hulu Plus free for 2 weeks when you go to HuluPlus.com/Steve. That's a special offer for my listeners. Make sure you use HuluPlus.com/Steve so you get the extended free trial and they know we sent you. Go to HuluPlus.com/Steve now.
Kerry King, guitars for Slayer. Hey, let's get back to music. Let's talk about Slayer a little bit more. You guys have been supporting this same album for a while now. Will you come out with another album soon?
The thought process now is to record in January. So, and we've got loads of material, me and Paul, that I worked with me and Paul as well as me and Dave before Dave left. So we've already got plenty of stuff. We just got to get done touring so we can clean up that stuff and record it. But the plan is, at this moment, January. So it would be out before the summer.
How many songs you got?
Me and Paul are playing 11. There's two he doesn't know and another one. So 14, 15.
And did you write the lyrics to all these?
I wrote the I got lyrics done on 7 of them.
Tom, contribute the other ones? Or these are all your songs?
7's done so far.
Okay. And you'll complete the rest of them?
No, Tom could... You know, he's got songs. I gave him the CDs and the demos. So if he wants to write something, he's more than welcome to.
You want me to come over and sit in with you and write you songs?
You already told me you can't.
Well, goddamn, you could have said, "Hey, yeah, come on over."
You already preempted that right when we started, so I already know the answer to that.
You could have helped me out a little bit. Goddamn, it's only my show. Hey, with all the traveling you guys do on the road, back at what we would do, there'd be a lot of ribs, a lot of guys playing jokes. If we was in a locker room and you got all these damn padlocks, a lot of times if one of those things is open, it's going on someone's bag or someone's belt loop, just stupid shit like that. When you guys are out on the road, whether it's inner Slayer stuff or just inner band stuff with the people you're touring with, you guys ever ribbing each other?
I think the crew more than us.
Really?
Yeah, the crew will fuck with each other a lot. You know, we've gotten to the point on these last few tours where if anybody on my crew messes up, like, see, my guitar tech misses a punch, and he's only got two or three a show, you know, or my guitar's out of tune, then he gets penalty shots, you know.
Yeah.
If my production manager has a backdrop go off in a funny place, you know, I get penalty shots for anything, you know. If you look at me the wrong way, you're getting a penalty shot.
Right.
And usually it's a penalty shot to me, too, because I'll drink with him.
Yeah.
That's not even a joke. That's just our fun way of bonding after the show, more or less. But as far as pranks go, there's not a whole lot of pranksters. I mean, there's jokesters, but not physical prank kind of thing.
Yeah. What do you guys, it's for you guys, if it's you guys and Slayers traveling down the road in a bus, you need a laugh, is there a go-to comedian?
Well, usually we travel at night after the show.
Right.
So we're only up 2-3 hours, right. Maybe. And then crashing the rest of the time.
So
we don't have a whole lot of together time.
Right.
Which is kind of odd. I mean, we are together, but, you know, Tom's on the bus. He's sleeping before me and Paul are in bed. Gary's going to sleep early. I've gotten to where I'm going to bed because I want to get recharged for the next show. You know, got to think about that these days. I'm not 20 anymore.
Yeah, that sucks. But that's the way it
is. It's the way it is.
It beats not being old. I get asked all the time. This show, I do this show for the working man, Kerry. And I get a lot of cats that are in the same boat you and I are. They're bald. When did you go to the slick head look?
When did I do that? 92, I think, yeah.
So obviously,
I put tattoos on my head. Actually, I put tattoos on my head before I shaved it all off. You know, I did what they did. You know, shaved it above your ear a little bit.
Yeah.
And I put the tattoos on. And there's kind of a chicken shit way to do it, because I thought if I didn't like it, I can just grow my hair back. But it's also hardcore, because nobody gets a tattoo on their head first.
Right.
And that's what I did.
Right. So take me through your process. I get people ask me all the time, hey, man, how do you take care of your dome? And like, shit. I shave this morning just for the hell of it. But, you know, if I ain't trying to go do no gig, you know, I'll let this motherfucker grow for, you know, a week or so. I look like shit. But if I ain't got a meeting, I just wear a cap all the time. I always tell people, I'll get it down with my trimmer first, and then I'll put a layer of shaving cream on. But I always go with the grain when I'm shaving, Kerry. What's your process? You in against the grain guy?
Absolutely.
Against the grain?
Yep.
But a lot of people with tender heads – we'll get those damn rashes and bumps. That's the only reason I tell them to go with the grain.
Guess I don't have a tender head.
I guess I don't either, but what do you use? Shaving cream, soap, and water, what?
That orange cap thing. Fuck, I don't know.
It's probably some Edge.
Maybe, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the one that comes tuna thing at Target.
I go get my bulk razors at Costco. I'm a twin blade guy. I don't believe in all that 5 and 6
I've
blade
tried
stuff.
I've tried 3, 4, and 5. I'm like, they got to be better now.
No.
And it doesn't work on the curves.
No.
You know, if you're just shaving your arms, which I do for my tats.
Yeah.
Yeah, but to get all the roundness of the melon, it just doesn't work.
It's too much. I mean, especially if you're going to do some, like right now, I'm about 2 or 3 weeks, and I got a bunch of growth on my face. Normally, I just had the goatee look, but it's deer season. I had a little movie project get pushed, so I'm heading to South Texas. So I'm growing my shit in, my whole beard in, for a couple of months.
Yep.
But when I'm shaving, man, I got to keep this motherfucker a little bit tight. And if you use anything bigger than a twin blade, you can't get close.
You're absolutely right.
So everybody always flaps their gums about all these damn blades. It's like, dude,
I thought it was revolutionary until I tried it.
Yeah, and it's like, nah, not so much.
Not at all. It just doesn't work. I mean, for a face, yeah. If you're going for a clean face, absolutely. Because you're not trying to stop at any certain point.
Yeah.
But then big motherfucking sledgehammer size 5-blade things, you can't control that at all.
Yeah. Before we start winding this thing down, I wanted to ask you about your guitar, your setup, your rig, what you play, and how you came to play what you play.
What I'm playing now, and what I've been playing for the last 6-7 years, headwise, are my signature Marshall heads.
Mm-hmm.
They had like a 6-7 year run, and they discontinued them, but you can still order them, and they'll make them. You know, it's just stuff like that doesn't stay on their permanent roster. But I'm running 3 of those live into 6 Mode 4 Marshall cabinets, which they don't make anymore. You know, it seems like I get on one thing and I like it, and then they move on to something else.
Right.
But the Mode 4 for me, with my head, it's a bigger cabinet, so it's warmer, definitely got a fatter sound, and it's just for our rhythms. It's big and beefy and awesome, and I don't run one head into like 2 cabinets next to each other, and one head into the next 2 cabinets, one head in the next 2 cabinets. I stagger my cabinets, so head 1 will go to cabinet 1 and 4. Head 2 will go to cabinet 2 and 5. Head 3 will go to 3 and 6. So you get a wash of all 3 of your heads, and it's really cool on stage. It's just, it's enveloping and it's loud, but it doesn't hurt.
Right.
It's awesome. My pedal board, I'm basically using a Zach Wild Overdrive and a Zach Wild Wah for my clean sound. That's the only one my tech punches. He punches it in. I just go straight through the monitor system. That's my guitars, BC Ridge. I've been playing BC Ridge forever. And let me go back to the heads. Before, I was using my signature one. I was using a Marshall JCM 800, which I still have. It's called the Beast. And when I sent that to the factory to have them see what I liked about it, like there's parameters every head are supposed to be within. Like say, you know, this capacitor can have a range from this to this and, you know, throughout the head. My head, that particular head, the Beast, was right dead center.
Right.
On all of them. And that's why I liked that one, because it was like one of those golden ones that was made, you know, just happened to have all the right things. So we copied that, and that's what became my head with all the other extra things we did to make it my head. So I've been playing Marshall heads since the dawn of time with Slayer the cabinets.
But when you spent so many years playing with Jeff Hanneman, was his a similar setup than yours?
He played 800s as well.
Yeah.
And he, you know, back then we would have a 10-band EQ that made the warmth of our sound or the overdrive part of our sound. And we both did that. We would set it differently. So we're both generally using the same thing, but we tweak it our own style a little bit.
Now, these days, you're playing with Gary Holt?
Yep.
Okay, now how has that been just, I know you played with him in the past, or you've been playing with for a
He's
while.
He's been with us since February 2011, yeah.
So how has that chemistry changed? I mean, you played with Hanneman for so long, and, you know, you just developed that chemistry, so now how is it playing with Gary?
Well, other than the fact that we played, me and Jeff, together for 25 years or so, I've known Gary for 25 years.
Right.
So it was easier than had I picked somebody I didn't know, without a question, because we've been friends all that time. And I admired him all that time. I used to go in guitar interviews and talk him up because he was kind of the overlooked guy. And he's really fucking good.
Right.
You know, I would compare him to Tipton from Priest, you know. Right. People like Priest, but they never ace out Tipton as a badass guy.
Right.
And he is my hero.
Right.
And I would call Holt the Tipton of our era.
Really?
You know, and then we got the opportunity to play together, and it's just fun, you know. It's like it's like having Jeff there, but it's
right.
Gary Holt.
Right. Well, okay, so speaking of some of the guitarists that you look up to or enjoy their playing, give me a couple of more guys that you dig.
Oh, I could watch Zakk Wylde play all day.
Yeah.
You know, that's just mind-blowing. I mean, I saw him. It was at San Bernardino. I can't remember what show it was. He was playing probably Black Label opening for somebody and did a solo. And, I mean, I'm a guitar player, and he's playing so fast. My brain can't even keep up with what he's doing. I mean, I know he's pulling off and doing a lot of Zakk Wylde tricks.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I'm just sitting there going, I'm a guitar player. What are these normal guys thinking?
Yeah.
That are trying to comprehend what he's doing. But, you know, he's awesome. Dimebag, good friend of mine. I could watch him all day.
Yeah.
You know, and he was, me and him and Zakk always joked about doing something. Everybody joked about us doing something. And, you know, I've got the only picture of the three of us together. I mean, it got made into a bunch of pictures, but,
yeah.
You know, there was one time in history that me and Zakk and Dime were in the same place that anybody photographed it.
Did y'all play together?
It was at 2004 Ozfest. Black Label was on it. Zakk was playing with Ozzy. Dime just came to the show.
When Dime got shot in Columbus, you heard the news. What did you think?
We were on stage, and I came off stage, and my tour manager at the time said, you know, took me aside. I'm like, what the fuck, you know? You know something's fucked up. And he said, your boy Dime. I'm like, what about Dime? He's like, he didn't make it. I'm like, didn't make what? You know, I didn't know anything that went on.
Didn't know he got shot.
No. No, and he's like, he didn't, you know, he got killed on stage. And you're thinking to yourself, why Dime? You know, one of the nicest people in the fucking world that everybody admires.
Yeah.
You're like, why Dime? Way more people hate me.
But
you
did,
know,
you,
how,
did
how
you?
Did it happen to be him?
But did you think that, hey, you know, if I'm thinking a guitarist and a rock band dies on stage, I'm thinking scaffolding or lighting or something fell on him. I didn't think someone pointed a gun at him and shot him. Mm-hmm. So what did you think when you found out someone had shot him?
Well, I mean, that was an incredibly difficult evening. You know, I went out, got my phone. Of course, I got 25 messages or texts, whatever happened back then. You know, and then you talk to all your guitar endorsers. I talked to Zakk Wylde, you know, all my friends that were close with me and him. And, you know, let's put it together, you know. What are you going to do?
Yeah.
You know, just be fucking sad forever.
Yeah.
Well, I did an in-store, because that night we were in Billings, Montana, and I still got a poster from the Slayer show that night. The Dime got shot, and I'm like, I'm keeping that forever. But, like, right after that, I was doing an in-store run to where I was playing guitar and, you know, talking to people. And I think it was in Seattle, somewhere in Washington. You know, I'm the only one that had a Jaeger, so I can't give it to everybody out there. You know, midday, one of them days. You know, we have those days.
Yep.
And I said, I'm going to do a shot for my brother Dime. And I said, all you hear, I said something like, you know, 1, 2, 3, cheers, Dime. I said, 1, 2, 3, and they blew my face off. You know, everybody loved that guy.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, man, going back to the early days of Slayer, when you guys signed your first contract, yeah, in the business of pro wrestling, you know, usually your first deal you get smoked on, or as we call it, we call it signing the starving rock and roll artist contract, because basically, you know, you don't have any rights, you're getting fucked out of a lot of stuff, or you haven't got enough things negotiated in. Did y'all sign a contract along those lines back in the day versus where you are now with obviously all the control, if not the majority of control?
Yeah, without question. You know, we got signed. When, like, me and Jeff were 19, I think Dave was 18.
Yeah.
And we're just happy to be signed.
Because you want to pay, and you want to pay, you want to get paid, and you want to perform.
Yeah, you want to put out a record,
and that's it.
And you want people to know it, so when you come to their town, they're all into it.
Yeah,
you know, and then like Rain and Blood, we're working on that one, and we went with Rick Rubin to a real—I shouldn't say real, because Metal Blade is a real record label, but you know what you call a major label. And Tom, to this day, is really not cool with Brian Slagle, you know. And the way I look at it, if it wasn't for Brian, we might still be playing in Orange County, that shitball fucking club.
Right.
You know, Brian's one of my best friends.
Right.
Because I don't let business get in the way of people being my friend. It's business, and I understand what he did. He gave us a deal. We took it. Nobody else is going to give us a better deal than that, so why right. should I hate him?
Right. A couple questions. I'll let you go. I know you got to get back to the house, and I appreciate you giving me the time that you've given me. I was, reading through some of, the notes as you guys were recording albums. And my, I guess the question I'm trying to ask is, how do you guys work with a producer? I was reading the name Rick Rubin in there a couple of times, and on the same page or not on the same page? Seemed like maybe there's some animosity there, because you guys seem like, as you said in an interview, you said, hey, he's got a real good ear, but you guys know what you want. What's the operating process for how you guys decide on the final sound on your album?
Well, Rick in the early days was way more involved. You know, he was like an everyday producer kind of guy. He was in there. You know, and then we did South of Heaven. He was still in there quite a bit. We had Seasons in the Abyss. Wasn't in there as much. We did Divine Intervention. Wasn't really in there at all. You know, just he kind of weeded himself out to where the producer, or I should say the engineer, essentially became the producer. And right. he's executive producer because he owns a record label and he's got final say.
But how does that work from an artist standpoint? I mean, because, dude, I'm a non-musician. I'm just a fan of music. So y'all play something and they say, hey man, check it out. Maybe try this to maybe open your mind up to something else. Or what is that dynamic?
I'm open to suggestion.
Right.
You know, but when I bring my stuff in there, it's finished in my mind generally.
Right.
But I mean that being said, you'd be an idiot not to try a new idea because it might be better.
Right.
You'd be hard headed and you know, it doesn't have anything to do with putting out the best thing. That's how I work with Greg Fiddleman, who did the last record, who I'm trying to get work on this upcoming record as well. He was like a fifth member of the band, and he made suggestions that actually stayed in the songs.
Right.
You know, things I'm like, that's a great idea. I never thought of that.
Right.
You know, he made great suggestions, and that's why I like working with him. And he's there before the band. He's there after the band. He knows. He's got parts written down by a time signature. Like, has nothing to do with it. It's a verse, chorus, bridge, whatever. Like, the middle of this part, this time signature. So I don't like the way this drum is.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, he's got his head wrapped around it, and that made a great environment for us to do a kick-ass record and a well-polished but still heavy-in-your-face record.
Any young bands out there that are grabbing your ear that you dig right now?
And unfortunately, no.
Yeah. Okay, so no. If I were to go to your vehicle right now, what would you have in your CD player or in your MP3? Or
nothing. My CD player don't work.
Well, you know what I'm saying.
And it broke on Zach
your
Wild disc.
Device, what do you have as far as what you listen to?
Oh, my iPod's out there, but dude, the funniest thing you're going to find is like South Park music.
Really?
Yeah.
So, okay.
You know, it's 95% metal stuff. You know, there's some Boston.
If you and the wife are rolling down the road, what we listen to?
She'll play all kinds of shit.
Yeah.
I don't really care. You know, but if I'm by myself, I don't want to play anything on mine. Mine's, like I said, 95% metal.
Right.
You know, aside from the hard rock, Van Halen, Boston, shit like that.
Yeah, that good old stuff from back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
And it holds up. Last question, Kerry. Anytime I talk to a cat like you who's been highly successful in their something they're passionate and love, their work, I always ask them to give a few tips. So if there's any young musicians, any young guitar cats out there trying to get started or trying to take the next step, any advice to a starving rock and roll wannabe?
Best thing I could say that kind of sums up what we happened to do. You know, when we started, we did what we liked because we liked it. We didn't make stuff up to get popular. I think that's a big statement because if you make something up to be popular, you're not really behind it. And kids are going to see through it eventually.
Mm-hmm.
Luckily, we made up what we were into day one and we just got to roll with it for 30 years.
Right.
And I think in a nutshell, that's it. Cause even though we played 30 years, no part of that time did we try to be something we weren't. And that's why kids dig it. And that's why you got the following, like an AC/DC following or an Iron Maiden following or a Judas Priest following. Not as much, but, you know, you just give the people what I mean, funniest thing people ask me these days are, how's a new record going to differ from the last one? Like, why the fuck you want it to differ? You right. like what I do.
Yeah.
You know, I like what I do. The fans like what we do.
Yeah.
You know, I've said a million times, I think of us as the AC/DC of thrash.
Right.
You know, and I'm not saying that to blow sunshine up my ass. I'm saying that because there's a similarity. You
right.
know? And that's why the fans like that given band. So, you know, you gotta believe in what you do. You gotta like what you're playing so you can sell it. You know, you can be behind it, you know, and that's to me, that's the toughest thing. Doesn't matter how fucking good you are. Because I know people out there that can play fucking circles around me, but can't write a song, save their life. And they will never be anything. It sucks.
And sometimes it's timing. It's like they're just
going. Oh yeah, right place, right time for sure.
Me and you know, finally the time presented itself, and I got my break.
Yep.
Did you have a plan B in your life? You've been doing this 30 years. You guys,
my dad had a plan
B.
My dad was a aircraft parts inspector.
Yep.
Until the day he stopped working, but early on, it was probably right before we did Hella Waits, so 84-ish, something like that. Like, he came to me and said, you know, I got a position in the company. They'll pay for you to go to school. You know, they wanted me to be an X-ray technician. And I went, that's cool. Interesting. You know, and me being the guitar player, I said, yeah. So when I got to go on tour, can I leave? I said, no. I said, no, thanks.
That sounds it.
Yeah. And to this day, you know I can't do this forever, but I really don't want to be a producer because I don't have the patience for it.
Right.
But, you know, maybe something in music. But I mean, if this ended tomorrow, if this ended after the next record, I would still do something. I got so many friends in this business. Like I said earlier, I could find somebody to play with and it would pay the bills. You know what I mean?
But I think you're probably a lot like me. You live below your means.
Yeah.
Yeah. And just don't blow money like it's going out of style.
Yep.
So that's kind of been my MO. But anyway, shit, man, it's been good talking to you. Appreciate you coming on the show. Slayer.
Hope you can come see us in Texas.
I'm going to try to hit you up in Austin. Slayer's on tour. You can check. What's the website for that, Kerry?
Slayer.net.
Slayer.net. Slayer's on Twitter. Not specifically Kerry, but at Slayer's
on Twitter.
Yeah,
I'm not on any of this
shit. Yeah, hey,
Slayer's
got
its own thing.
I'm throwing it out there to do my due diligence. I appreciate you talking with me, and I wish you safe travels, and hopefully I'll see you in Austin.
Awesome seeing you, man.
Later.
This has been a Podcast One production. Download new episodes of The Steve Austin Show every Tuesday at PodcastOne.com. That's PodcastOne.com.
Hey, what's up? It's Meta World Peace here. And I got my new podcast, Metaphorically Speaking. We're going to be talking about mental health, basketball, and a lot of tough topics. All that and more with my friends and celebrities. So make sure you check out my podcast, Metaphorically Speaking, every Thursday on Apple Podcasts, Podcast One, and Spotify.